Bester.
I can't find.
Okay, so we're holding on page Nunvov in Rav Avassra Oischofvov. We started talking last time about Eos, because the Gemara had gone through the Svarim of Nevi'im and the Svarim of Tanakh, who wrote each one. We said Moshe wrote Sefer Eos, and the Gemara had brought an opinion that, in fact, Eos lived in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Gemara had gone through that point. So now let's talk about more opinions when Eos lived. Yosef Ahumi Rabbanan Kamei of Shmuel Banachmeni. One of the Rabbanan was sitting, Yosef was sitting, Kamei, in front of Derav Shmuel Banachmeni. The Yosef Vakamar, he was sitting and saying. It's interesting, a lot of times the Gemara will use that expression, that somebody was sitting, and then he was sitting and saying. There's an explanation, I think, for Ben Yoyada, that the vote would be. They usually sat in the Beis Medrash, but when a person was going to say something, he has to get Rishus first from the Rosh Hashiva. So he would stand up to get permission, and then he would sit down and say what it is that he had to say. Be that as it may, so he says, Eos lo hoya v'lo nivra, Eos never was and was never created, ela moshel hoya. He was a moshel. In other words, so in the simple sense, the way we would understand it, it means exactly that. There was never an actual person named Eos who underwent everything that describes in the Sefer. The whole thing is a moshel. Rashi explains this way. You can learn from him. People argue about the midas adin. People argue, why does Hashem seem to be acting in an unfair way towards tzaddikim and towards rishayim? So this way you can learn from that Sefer answers regarding that, the whole dialogue, or the dialogues between Eos and his friends, and ultimately what Hashem answers to that. You can also learn from it, Rashi says, that ain't odom nitbas al tzarei. I was going to point out later on, we find as we go through the sugya, we're going to talk about many harsh things and many, frankly, apocursish things that Eov said in the course of his dialogues. And yet, at the end of the Sefer, Hashem says to the three friends, "You didn't speak to me correctly the way Eov did." What do you mean? Eov said horrible things, but we learn from that. The Gemara says, and Rashi says, this is one of the things that you're meant to learn from the Sefer, from the Moshul in the Sefer. Einonim nitpas al tzare. A person is not held responsible for what he says when he's in distress and pain like that. So that's one meaning of Moshul Hoya. Rav Sadia Goin gives another point as well, that it teaches us about the whole concept of schar v'onish in general, and it teaches us how a person should react to such things. But in any case, so according to that, it would mean that he never actually existed. And in fact, now Tosfos brings from a medrash that says slightly differently, that there was a person Eov, but he never actually underwent these yisurim. Why does the pasuk describe and give a whole blow by blow description of what he went through? It tells us, you know what a great tzaddik he was. Even if all of this had come on him, he still would have been able to withstand it and not lose his emuna in Hashem. So according to that, then there was an actual historical figure Eov, but all the disasters and troubles and sicknesses and whatnot that he went through is not actually what happened. Now, then you have yet another opinion about it as well. You have it's brought from Rabbi Hai Goin. There was a Rishon called Rabbi Yeshua Ibn Shuiv. He wrote a sefer, he was a Talmud of the Rashba. He wrote an important sefer of Drushes. He has in his Drushes, he brings from Rabbi Hai Goin, a slightly different girsa. Eos lo hoya v'lo nivra, ela le moshel hoya, with an extra lamed. And that changes the meaning of it. Not that there was never a person named Eos, and it's only a moshel, but rather the whole reason why Eos ever existed was in order to serve as a moshel, that his whole life story should serve as a moshel to teach us how a person should react in these circumstances, and as Rashi says, what kind of arguments can be brought to bear about it, and so forth. And then the Ben Yehoyada brings an interesting idea about it. He says, he has a long explanation, explaining various parts of the Gemara over here. He explains, to make a very long story short, he says, Eos was a Gilgal of Terach. So he says, therefore, he was a Gilgal of Terach, Avraham's father. So, like Hoya, he wasn't in the sense that this is the first time that Neshama came down, was in the body of Terach. And Veloy Nivra, and Terach in turn, was not created in the sense of perfected as in having a Bris Milah. Because with a bris milah, a person's, a man's body is perfected and can be said to be created. So therefore, he learns that that's what it means. He was originally in this galgal and terach, and then now he had to go come down again and come down in Eos. Okay, anyway, in any case, according to the simple meaning of the Gemara, he's saying that there was no such person or that, and it was just a mushal. Amalei, said Rav Shmuel Banachmeni, said to him, no, it can't be. Alecha amakra, the pasuk says, to answer you, it says, Ish hoya be'eretz Utz Eov Shmai. It starts introducing him. There was a man in the land of Utz named Eov. Now, if it was just a mushal, there wouldn't be a reason to mention that particular detail. Omale, so he says, Elamayata, well, by that logic, let me give you another example where we have a clear mushal in a pasuk, and it still gives the whole backstory kind of the mushal. You have the story over there when after David has taken Bathsheba and arranged that Uriah should be killed in battle, so Nasan Anavi comes to David to give him a mushal about so he should realize what he had done wrong. And he tells him a mushal, there are two people in a town, a rich and a poor man. The rich man has lots of sheep and all kinds of other animals. The poor man, V'lo Rosh Ein Kol, the pasuk says, the poor man had nothing. King Kivsa Achas Tan, all he had was one little sheep that he raised. And then the Nasan goes on to continue with the mushal that the rich man, one day a guest comes to him, and instead of taking one of his sheep to offer to the guest, he takes this poor guy's sheep and offers it. And David says, I'm talking, how could a person do such a thing? He's Chayav Nisa. And then Nasan tells him, you should realize this is a mushal. This is actually about you and Uriah. You have many wives. Uriah had only the one. How could you take his wife, etc., etc.? So now, the way the pasuk phrases it also, it makes it sound like it's an actual thing. Mihava, but there wasn't any actual such rich person and poor person. It's just a mushal. El mushal ba'alma, who is just a mushal. Hachanami mushal ba'alma. So the same way, fine, it says there was a man in the land, there was a man named Iyov. It still could be a mushal. Amalei, but Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani says, in Kain, Shmoi v'shem Irei Lomali. Fine, but in that case, why would it have to mention his name and the name of the place where he came from? Why would it have to give him a name, Iyov, and in the mushal that Nasan HaNavi gives to David? He doesn't name the rich man or the poor man. He doesn't say what city they lived in. Yeah, whatever is necessary for the point is, the mushal, all that's necessary for the mushal is to know that one of them was rich and one of them was poor, etc. So the same way, you know that there was a rich man who underwent the suffering, etc., etc. There's no reason to give him a name, and much less a place where he lived specifically. In fact, Marshall also adds a point, at least maybe you could say that, you could say maybe with the story of the rich man and the poor man, maybe there was such a thing, but the pasuk mentions a detail over there. It says that this poor man, he loved this sheep so much that he raised it and it would sit in his lap all the time, but he like kivas, it was like a daughter to him. No real person is going to act that way, so therefore we can understand that the thing is a mushal. Okay, so then it comes out. In other words, Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani is saying, given all those details that you have in the pasuk, you can't really say that he didn't exist. You have to say that there was an actual figure named Iyov. Now, again, you could say, like Tosfos says, that he existed but didn't actually undergo all of this that says in the pasuk, or you could say, like Rav Haigoin, he only existed in order to be a mushal. But you have to say, says Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani, the fact that the pasuk goes to the trouble of telling us where his name and where he came from means there was an actual such person. Okay, so the Gemara continues more opinions on the subject.
His name might be because it's a much longer mushal than Nasan B, and it's like a whole huge sefer.
It's true.
Much longer mushal, and you're going to need a name, and you can't just say person A, person B.
No, but you could say, for example, the man, you could say the sufferer or something. Sometimes you find in the psukim, sometimes you have entire, here, for example, you have, it's a very good point, but consider, for example, let's say you have the story with Elisha and the Isha Shunamis. Throughout that whole story, and she appears many times in the story, she's never named. She's always just called the woman from Shunin. See, here it could have said the man from Utz, or it could have said the man who was, whatever, yeah. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar d'amri tavayu. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar both give a different opinion. Iyov me'olei goyla hoya. Iyov was actually one of the ones who came up from Golis Babel. Or base midrashay, v'tveria hoya. And he actually had a base medrash located in the city of Tveria. The Yerushalmi talks about this in the Masechta Sota, because there's a Mishnah over there that mentions a short thing about Iyov, and then so the Yerushalmi expands on it a little bit, over the Bible. He also does, but the Yerushalmi more so, and it mentions that Rabbi Yochanan actually learned from Iyov a particular halacha in the halachas of Avelus. I don't know whether the Yerushalmi means that Rabbi Yochanan personally saw this Iyov and actually learned it from him face to face, or whether he just means that he derives it from the Psukim in Iyov. So he was a Talmud Chacham and actually had a base medrash, they were going to that. Now, the interesting point is, how does it come about? I mean, there's no other story like that in Chumash where you have such wide variation in when it happened. I mean, in Tanakh, that there's such wide variation when it happened. How comes it? You have Minakotze Alakotze, we're going to talk soon, you have an opinion that he was in the times of Yaakov Avinu, and you have an opinion that he was in the times of after Golis Babel, so like 1,200 years later. The Ritva says that maybe what it is Sefer Iyov. He says for a long while, Sefer Iyov was very, it didn't circulate widely, maybe because it's a very difficult Sefer to understand. So there were only Yechidei Segula who had access to it. So over time, the backstory of it got forgotten, says the Ritva. And Maharal makes another point of it. I once heard from a friend of mine a great joke. You know, we talked about the other day when we were talking about the order of the Sfarim of Ksuvim, which Tosfos had pointed out that Tilim, Iyov, and Mishlei, or in printed Tanakh nowadays, Tilim, Mishlei, and Iyov, are put together because they all have the same system of Torah, as different than the other books of Tanakh. But one of my old classmates once said to me, what do Tilim, Mishlei, and Iyov have in common? So the obvious answer is that system of Torah. He says the obvious answer is that special system of Torah, Tana Emes. But the other answer is in Tilim, it's very difficult to see the connection between one capital and the next. In Mishlei, it's very difficult often to see the connection between one Hasid and the next. And in Iyov, it's also very difficult to see the connection between one word and the next. Yeah. The truth is, Iyov is actually a very fascinating and beautiful sefer if you read it with a good mefurdish. Artscroll actually has an excellent commentary on it in English, which is well worth reading. The Malbim has a great thing on it. That Al-Bag goes through it. A lot of them go through it very systematically, and when you do, then it's an amazing sefer. But yeah,
Iyov was one of Paro's.
There's an opinion that he was one of Paro's advisors. Yeah, there's an
Iyov
and Bilam. You have the famous thing that Bilam advised Paro to persecute them. Yisrael was quiet.
Yisrael
was quiet. Yisrael said, don't start up with them. Yeah. And therefore, Yisrael had to run away. And eventually, he became great. And he became Moshe Rabbeinu's father. Yeah. You have all that as well. Yeah. I think ultimately that comes from the Zohar. But yeah. Anyway. So.
The Gemara.
Oh, you're right. It's in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Yeah, you're right. Okay. Maybe the Zohar expands on it. I don't remember. Anyway. Okay. Anyway, the Maharal has an interesting point about it. He says like this. You look at the beginning of Sefer Iyov. You have this great tzaddik Iyov, Tom, Yosha, Yireh, Lekim, V'Soh, the Ebishter is pointing out to the Sotan, no less, look how great this guy is. And then the Sotan accuses him and everything comes crashing down. How does it come about that a tzaddik like that should have to undergo so much tremendous thing because the Sotan essentially is convincing Hashem to do it? So the Maharal explains, you have to say that it must be, it was a time when there was a tremendous Midas Adin, when it was a time when the Midas Adin is very much in power. So at a time like that, the Sotan will be given unusual powers to be able to persecute even a tzaddik like Iyov. So now the argument among the different opinions is what time in history was there when you could say that the Midas Adin was so powerful that the story would have happened. So meaning, in other words, there may have been different people. For example, Rabbi Yochanan would have known one person who could fit the criteria of Iyov. In his opinion, that time, when they came up from Golas Babel, is a time when Midas Adin is very much in effect. As we see, the Jews who came up from Golas Babel were having a very hard time of it, and therefore he says that would be the one whose story is recorded in Sefer Iyov. Meanwhile, there'd be another opinion that there was that in the times of the Meraglim, for example, there was a tremendous Midas Adin like that, because you have, in particular, we learned last time, his chus was protecting the Goyim in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the Sultan would have come in and accusing, you need this tzaddik over here that his host should be protecting them. Let's get rid of him. So therefore, that would be another time. And therefore, so each one of them would be referring to a particular time in history when such a thing is most likely to have happened.
We have a similar case where the tzaddik is accusing Avraham
Avinu. Yeah. So, and in fact, there are opinions that he lived in that period as well. Yeah. The Yerushalmi, that Yerushalmi in Sota, by the way, we're going to talk soon about Eliyahu ben Barachel Abuzi, who appears in Sefer Iyov. In Sota, actually, in the Yerushalmi in Sota, it gives two opinions who he was. One opinion there, Rabbi Akiva there identifies him as Bilam, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah argues and says it's Yitzchak. polar opposites, literally. Yeah. Anyway. Onward. So the Gemara says, Nasi, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Yemesh Noisav Shal Iyov, the time, the period that Iyov lived, Mishash Nichnos Yisrael Mitzrayim Vav Shash Yotzu. It's from the time the Jewish people entered Mitzrayim until they left. Now that means that he passed away around the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So what is Rabbi Yochanan telling us that he lived almost 1,000 years later at the time when they're coming up from Babel? The answer is, Ema, you have to say, what the Braisa means is, Ki Mishash Nichnasu Vad Shash Yotzu. He lived the same amount of time as from when the Jewish people entered Mitzrayim until they left. How long were the Jewish people in Mitzrayim? 210 years, as we know, Redu. Yeah. Well, Eov, the pasuk doesn't say how old he was when all the disasters happened, but at the end of the Sefer, it says that he lived 140 more years. Now, right before that, it says that everything that he had before was doubled. He had, at the beginning of the Sefer, it says he had X amount of cattle, now he has twice as many. He had X number of camels, now he has twice as many. The Gemara is going to explain later, it says that he had also sons and daughters. We'll talk about later, Bez Hashem, whether they were the same sons and daughters from before that were actually just hidden away by the Sufna, whether they were new ones, but in any case, the Gemara mentions later on they were exceptionally beautiful. They were doubled in beauty. Therefore, Rashi says we can assume that also his years were doubled. Well, then if he lived 140 years after all this, it means he lived 70 years before it. Total 210.
210.
So therefore, total 210.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that's what it means. He lived the same amount of time, but not during those years. Rather, according to Rabbi Yochanan, he lived almost 1,000 years later. By the way, Marsha points out, if you're going to say that he was from Oyle Goyla, or if you're going to say that his source is protecting the Goyim in Eretz Yisrael, the seven nations, then you have to say that when it says he lived in Eretz Utz, that would mean originally he lived in Eretz Utz. So he lived in Utz during the time of Golus Vavel, and then he came to Eretz Yisrael and settled in Tveria. Or originally he lived in Utz, and later on he came and settled in Eretz Canaan.
Why did Hashem double his years?
Because Hashem doubled everything that he had had originally. In particular, the pasuk says, "V'spalle ba'adre ehu." We learned in Bava Kamma that when a person needs something and he davens for others, then Hashem answers him and gives him first. What happened was, at the end of Eov, it says over there, Hashem says to the three friends, "I'm very angry at you that you didn't speak to me properly, that in all their arguments they were speaking in ways that Hashem considered improper or disrespectful, or if nothing else, disrespectful to Eov, and therefore you have to go and have Eov daven on your behalf, that Hashem shouldn't punish you," and he did. He happened for them, and then Hashem restored his fortunes and even doubled them. Yeah, we'll talk soon though. There's more to it than that, but yeah. Okay. The Gemara goes on. Maisvi, I have another contradiction. Which in that case, Tosfos points out, that's the chiddush is, otherwise we would have thought that Hashem doubled his wealth, and Hashem doubled the beauty of his daughters, as it says in the pasuk. But we wouldn't know that Hashem doubled his years if it weren't for the statement that he lived 210 altogether. Okay. The Gemara says Maisvi. Now I have another contradiction. Shiva Nevi'im Nisnabul Obdikachovim. There are seven Nevi'im that said Nevoah to the Goyim. The Elohim, Bilam V'Aviv, for the first two are Bilam and his father. Now Bilam we know, of course. Why his father? Tosfos says because we have a general rule that whenever a Navi is introduced with his father's name, means his father was a Navi also. And since Bilam is called Ben Ba'ur, then it means Ba'ur had to have been a Navi as well. Marsha objects to that on the basis of the continuation of the Gemara. So he says, no, what it means is rather because there's places in the Nevuah of Bilam where he calls himself Bilam Benoi Ba'ur. Now, the simple meaning is Benoi is just a poetic way of saying the son of. But the Chazal say, Rashi brings it on the Pesukim, that it means, the deeper meaning of it is that Bilam is saying that my father, Ba'ur, is Bnoi. Relative to me, he's like my son. Relative to Bilam, he's like a son, because in other words, his powers, Ba'ur's powers of Nevuah were much less than Bilam's. So in that sense, then we see clearly Ba'ur was a Navi just of a lesser caliber than Bilam. So therefore, that's the first two. The Eov himself, the Eliphaz HaTemoni Uvilda HaShuchi V'tsofa HaNamasi, these are the three friends who first come to visit Eov, and their dialogues take up most of the Sefer. And the Elihu ben, why their actual name, Eldad HaTemon, Eliphaz HaTemon, means Eliphaz from Temon, which is one of the descendants of Esav. Eldad HaShuchi means a descendant from Shuach, which is one of the descendants of Keturah. So if I'm Namasi, there would be some nation called Namasi, whatever. Each of them is from a different nation. Shuach is one of the sons of Avraham and Keturah. No, we're saying that these characters who are mentioned in Sefer Eov were among the Nevi'im to the Goyim.
You just said Shuach was...
No, I didn't say Shuach himself. Bildad HaShuchi. He's Bildad, the one from Shuach, meaning that he was descended from or lived in the country of Shuach.
Wow.
And he was saying that he was a Navi to the Goyim. Really? Yeah, that's what we're saying.
That's like Persia or India.
I don't know where it is exactly, but yeah. The Elihu ben Barach al-Abuzi, and the last one, the seventh, is Elihu ben Barach al-Abuzi. So it comes out, therefore, based on this Braisa, when we're saying Nisnabu lo'ev kechavim, the Gemara is assuming that what it means is that they themselves were Goyim, and Hashem gave them Nevuah to their fellow Goyim. Well, in that case, then, Eov is not a Jew who came from Babel, like Rabbi Yochanan is saying. He's a Goy who lived a long time earlier, or who lived at some point. Omale, so the answer is no. Vilitaimich, Elihu ben Barachel Habuzi, Hochanami Lab Yisrael. Are you going to tell me that Elihu ben Barachel is not a Yid? He has to be a Yid. The Pasuk calls him that when the Pasuk first introduces him, he's called Elihu ben Barachel Habuzi, Mimishpachas Rom, from the family of Rom. So Rashi gives two explanations. Number one is if it's calling him not only by his name and his father's name, Elihu ben Barachel, but it's even telling us the name of his family, from the family of Rom, that implies he must have been a Yid, you know, because therefore the Pasuk would go to the trouble of telling us his Yichus. Mm-hmm. The second explanation, Rashi says, is Mimishpachas Rom actually means that from Rom is short for Avraham. So it means he's from the family of Avraham, so he's a Yid.
Very nice.
Maharsha mentions another point as well. The names Elihu and Barach El, both of them have Hashem's name in it. That's a naming convention that Jews use. Goyim don't use that kind of naming convention. Therefore, we have very good reason to assume that Elihu and his father Barach El were both Jews. Now again, the Yerushalmi takes a different view of it, because Rabbi Akiva and the Yerushalmi says that that identifies Elihu as Bilam. And he explains he's called Ben Barachel because he was forced to bless the Jewish people, and he's called Abuzi because his nevuah was just like a contemptible one compared to the Nevi'im like Moshe Rabbeinu, and then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah gives a different explanation and identifies him as Yitzchak. Okay, but anyway, our Gemara as Yitzchak Avinu.
Maybe he's
Yechezkel,
because Yechezkel also had the same father.
Yechezkel had the same name, his father had the same name, Buzi, that's true, but I don't think there's anybody. I mean, the only one that would be compatible with is Rabbi Yechanan's opinion that he was Me'ula Gola, but I don't know of anybody who says who identifies. Could be, I don't know. Anyway, so the point is, Elihu ben Barachel, all Gemara is taking the view, was unquestionably a Yid. Well then, Ella, so what does it mean when we list him among the ones prophesied to the Goyim? Ella is Nabuya is Nabi Lovin. All it means is he prophesied to the Goyim. Hochanami, so the same thing. You don't say when Eov is on this list, it doesn't mean that he himself is a non-Jew. It means it's Eov is Nabuya is Nabi Lovin. It means that he prophesied to the Goyim, but he himself could well have been a Yid. So when asked in that case, why do you have a list of only seven? Otu kulu nevi'im yelois nabi'u la'ovdi kachavim? What do you mean many of the other nevi'im gave nevuas to the goyim? A large parts of the, not large parts, but several chapters back to back of Yeshaya and Yirmiyah and Yechezkel and various mons among the Tirei Aser are all addressed to various goyish nations.
Yeah.
Yonah is the older, for sure, but you have also almost has the beginning of his Sefer, has a bunch of things that Hashem speaks to this nation and that nation and warns them because of their Averis, they're going to get punished with this and that. Ivadia, his whole Nevuah is to Edom, etc. You have many among the Tirei also. You have quite a few of them. So you have many Jewish Nevi'im who gave Nevuah to the Goyim. So why are these special? So the answer is Akulu Nevi Iku Nevi Yisrael B'Yisrael. The answer is most of the Nevi'im in Tanakh, their main Nevuah is addressed, their main body of Nevuah is addressed to the Jewish people. Yeah, they have a little bit to the Goyim, but even for example, let's say we'll take Yonah or Nahum or whatever, we only have a small part of their Nevuah. I mean, Yonah, for example, had a long career as a Nabi. Nahum, we don't know for sure, but we can assume he also, that here we're going to have in a couple of days when we restart Rambam, and the Rambam lists in his introduction, he lists the say the order of the Masorah from Moshe Rabbeinu down to Ravashi. Nochum is on the list over there, so he headed a Beis Din that were the Makabli Atorah in their times. We can assume he had quite a long career as a Navi, and still we only have three chapters of Nevuah from him, all about Nineveh, but we can assume he had many other Nevuahs during his lifetime, so mainly his Nevuah. So addressed to the Jewish people, what was recorded was only what's to the Goyim. Hani, but the difference is with these seven Ikru Nevi'u Sayu Ba'ovi Kachavim, their main Nevuahs are addressed to the nations of the world. So therefore, the point is that none of the ones on this list do we necessarily have to say were Goyim. They may well have been Jews, and therefore we can still go with Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. And he was a Yid who lived through Golus Bavel and lived in Utz, as Maharshal says, and afterwards moved from there to Eretz Yisrael and settled in Tveria, but he was a Navi, and he mainly was given Nevuah to the Goyim. Okay, the Gemara says Macy. Now I have another contradiction against Rabbi Yochanan. A Braisa says Chosid Hoya Ba'ovdi Kachavim. There was a Chosid. No, there was a great Chosid among the Goyim. The Iyov Shmoy, and his name was Iyov. The Loi Bala Olam Ela Kadela Kabel Scharei. The only reason Hashem brought him into the world in the first place is in order to receive his Schar. We'll talk in a second what that means. Bo, Havia, Kodesh Bochu, all of you stirring. Now what happened? Hashem brought suffering on him. Hiskel, Machara from Agadif. So he started reviling and blaspheming Hashem. Originally, you have in the Psukim, it says over there, he didn't criticize Hashem the first time when he went through, but then the second time after that, again, as we're going to have, as the Gemara is going to discuss later on, you have various statements that he made that are outright apikorsish or chutzpah dikta Hashem or whatever. Now, before we said the Gemara and the Rashi had quoted, and the Gemara says at the end of the Sugya that, Einonim that a person is not held responsible for what he says when he's in that kind of distress. But evidently, this Braisa disagrees with that point and says that he is held responsible for talking that way. Well, then what happened? So Hashem doubled. Hashem gave him extra reward in this world. So that's another reason why Hashem doubled all of his wealth and everything in his years. In order to kick him out of Olam Haba. In other words, by rights, he would have deserved a place in Olam Haba, but instead he forfeited it because by the way he's talking. Because by the way he talked.
Now, a pasuk that says that a guy that is a rasha, but he does like one mitzvah, like kibbut avim, he's going to get olam hazeh, he's going to be very wealthy and everything, but he's not going to get olam haba.
Well, many times, that's the case.
Yeah. Pnei, something like
Pnei Hashem, but maybe you're thinking about, I don't know, yeah. Okay. So Marshall explains the voters like this. A chassidim among the Jewish people, we don't come to the world primarily to get our schar in Olam Hazeh. When the Eibishter puts us in the world, it's primarily that we'll get a schar la Olam Haba. Hayoyim la'asoysam, today in this world is the time to do mitzvahs, l'mochar in the future is l'kabel scharan. As opposed to the goyim, yeah, mashalom, maybe this is the passage you're thinking of, or mashalom l'soyna v'alpana, of Marashah quotes over here, yeah. So Hashem pays back his enemies to their faces, meaning that Hashem gives them their schar in this world, and then they don't get an olam haba.
Where's that written?
Marashah brings it over here, predictive, mashalom l'soyna v'alpana. So now, then the Gemara would be saying that the Pasuk is telling us what a great chassid he was, but he wasn't treated like a chassid of the Jewish people, rather he was considered like all the other goyim. So he was only brought into the world to receive his schar in olam hazeh. So in other words, if he had passed this test, then he would have gotten the point was that he would have gotten his primary schar, not his primary schar, but at least he would have also gotten a schar in Olam Haba. So now what happens is, though, so a person is going to say, wait a minute, is it fair that you're putting this guy in the world and he's not even going to get a place in Olam Haba, all he's going to get is Olam Hazeh? So Hashem brings upon him Yisurim. Now Hashem says, listen, Tzadikim among the Jewish people, Hashem brings on them Yisurim, and as the Gemara is going to point out later, Avraham, for example, and the other Obed didn't complain. On the other hand, here, Eov starts going through it, figuring that Hashem will test him in this world to give him a schar in Olam Haba, and he instead starts talking chutzpidik against Hashem. So therefore Hashem says, fine, get your whole reward in this world, and you'll lose your place in Olam Haba that you would have gotten had you passed the test. So in other words, the point is, Maharsha is saying, like this, Hashem, he could have had the opportunity to be on the level of Abraham, and then he would have gotten a schar in Olam Haba, and like this, he forfeited it.
Did you notice?
Did he notice? I don't know if he noticed. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. Marsha also refers to a point that the Gemara mentions in this connection. The Gemara mentions in Chagiga. Marsha mentions this in many, many places throughout Shas to explain a lot of different phrases that Chazal use in many places, that we've talked about this before in this year, every person starts out with a portion in Gan Eden and a portion in Gehenim. A tzaddik doesn't need the portion in Gehenim, so he doesn't need it. So therefore it goes to a different Rasha who ends up getting a double portion of Gehenim and forfeiting his place in Gan Eden, which goes to the tzaddik. So like this, Eov would have had the opportunity to have that double reward in Olam Hazeh and in Olam Haba, but he forfeited it, so instead he got extra reward in this world, and then he lost his Olam Haba. The point is, in other words, it comes out from that he was not Jewish, because if he was, because where the Braisa is clearly saying, Chosin Hoya, but Ovi Kechavim. So how does that fit with Rabbi Yochanan's opinion that he was one of the Olei Goyim? So the Gemara says, Tanoyi. You know what? It's a Macholikas Tanoyim. When Eov lived. If it was just that one Braisa, then you're right, Rabbi Yochanan and Amora can't go up against the Braisa, but we do find many different opinions of Tanoim, and once we go through them, we will see that at least one of them is compatible with the idea that he was a Yid, or most of them are. D'tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Eov v'mech shvoita shoftim hoya. Rabbi Eliezer says that Eov lived in the time of the shoftim, in the time of Sefer shoftim. When the shoftim were judging the Jewish people, Shenema, because Eov says in one of his arguments to his friends, he says, "Hein atam kolchem chazisim, behold, all of you have seen," meaning that you even have nevuah, because as we said before, they were neviim. V'lamaza hevel tabalu. So why are you acting in a vain, in a useless way? Eev says this to his friends. You know, he's, you're telling me off the whole time. You're telling me that I must have done Averis and therefore I deserve what I've gotten. But you've all seen the truth. You've all seen Nevuah even. So why are you talking vain and nonsense words? Now, the Eza Dosha Kulei Hevel, what is a generation that can be described as all Hevel, as all meaninglessness, that even the relatively good people were not so good? Hevi Omer, you would have to say, Zed Dosha Shal Shvot HaShoftim. This is the generation of the Shoftim, specifically the generation that's described in the opening Pasuk of Rus that uses the expression, by he made Shvot HaShoftim. It was in the time of the judging of the judges, which the Gemara is going to explain later on, that it means it was a time when even the judges themselves were not so good, and people would tell them, you're going to judge us, you yourself have what to correct about yourselves. So such a generation can be called Kulei Hevel. So Maharsha explains, it's not just a matter of the same word Hevel being used. It's more a matter of that Eev is telling them, look at you, you're in a generation where even the judges themselves are corrupt and need to be told off. So what makes you think you're going to tell me off that I'm doing wrong when you yourselves are Hevel, you yourselves are Hevel to Hevel, or you yourselves are no better? I guess somehow relates to that, but yeah. Rabbi Yeshua ben Kochoy, Eev b'mei Achashverosh hayom. Eev lived in the time of Achashverosh. Now that would work with Rabbi Yochanan's opinion that he lived at the end of Golos Babel. Shenema, because the pasuk says at the end, v'loy nimtza noshim yofers kivnos Eev b'chol ha'aretz. There were not found in the entire land, in the entire world, as women as beautiful as Eev's daughters. Now, what do you mean, loy nimtza? Ezer Dershin is back to Noshim Yofas. In what generation were they searching for beautiful women? So the Gemara asked the aim of May David. Fine, but you could say there was another time when there was a beauty contest like that. In David's time, because the Pasuk says they were looking for a beautiful girl to be David's attendant at the end of his life when he couldn't keep warm, etc., at the beginning of Malachim. The answer is Hasan Machol Gro Yisrael. David's messengers were looking only throughout Eretz Yisrael, because they were looking for a Jewish girl. Here the Pasuk says there was no one found in the entire world as beautiful as Eev's daughters. So there was only one time we know from Tanakh when they were looking for beautiful girls throughout the entire world, and that was in Achashverosh's times. Now, Maharsha brings up the point, well, in that case, how come one of these girls didn't end up getting picked as queen instead of Esther?
Yeah.
So Maharsha says, because you could say that Eev hid them. The Gemara mentions in Megillah that all the fathers throughout the empire knew there's a what's the chance necessarily that their daughter is going to be the one chosen. Much more likely she's going to end up in the base on Noshim Sheni and the Harem over there, or available only for Achashverosh when Achashverosh feels like calling on her. So therefore many of the fathers actually hid their daughters and didn't want them to participate. So we can say Maharshal says Eev did the same thing. So Loi Nimsa, they couldn't find them because he was hiding them. A couple of the other Mephoshim say, and there's a different answer, the Gemara mentions in Megillah that as it is, one way of looking at it is Esther was not so classically beautiful, but Chut Shel Chesed, Hashem gave her a special graciousness, special favor in people's eyes, that he has to know Sischein Ve'enei Kora'el. So according to that, objectively, Eve's daughters may have been more beautiful, but the Eivishter arranged things that nevertheless Achashverosh should prefer Esther.
Something was 80,
90
years old?
She was
ugly looking, but
not so much ugly looking, but it says Yakroika, sorry, yeah, she was like greenish or sallow or something. Okay. Fine. So that's another opinion. And again, the Maharal explains, and in keeping with his explanation about Midas Adin, that each of these times you can see that there was a tremendous Midas Adin in the world, and therefore each of these Tanoim or Amoraim is saying that was an appropriate time when the story of Eev could possibly have happened. Reb Nosson says that this took place during the time of the Queen of Shva. We know from the Pesukim in Melachim and Divrei Yomim that at one point the Queen of Shva visited Shlomo and was very overawed and very amazed by his wealth and his chokhmah and all of that. So Eev lived in that time. The Gemara is going to explain later that Malkus Shva doesn't actually mean a queen, but we'll learn that next time. That's a shame. But anyway, Shenema, because the Pasuk says in the catalog, in the first parak, when it describes one after the other, messengers come to Eev and say all the disasters that have befallen him. One of them is they say that people Shva vatikachem, that Shva fell on the cattle and on the donkeys while they were grazing and took them. So therefore, we're meant to understand that it must have been at a time when Shva was part. So first of all, it would mean a time when Shva law was particularly powerful. And even though, I mean, the kingdom of Shmah probably existed for hundreds or thousands of years, but we only find in the time of Shlomo where they became notable enough. And also, Maharsha points out, since the Pasuk later on, when it refers to Malchus Shvah, everything is in the feminine, she came, she saw, and whatever, here also you have Vatipel Shvah in the feminine. So therefore, we have to understand that it was a time when they were ruled over by Malchus Shvah. So according to that opinion, that's when it took place, says Reb Nosson. The Chum say that Eev lived in the time of the Kastim, which would mean the time of Nebuchadnezzar. So in that case, what about the Shema? It would mean that there was one particular band of soldiers or whatever from Shema that came and attacked. But primarily, the great power at that time was the Kastim. Shenema, because the pasuk continues with another group of animals of Eev's. Kastim samu shloisha roshim. The Kastim deployed themselves in three divisions and took all the camels and whatnot. So therefore, so we see the Kastim must have been particularly powerful at that time to be able to have three divisions to be able to attack Eev's livestock. Otherwise, in other words, Maharsha points out, the Pasuk, Yeshaya, says about the Kastim, he says, Zeha om loy hoya. This was, up until now, this nation was a nothing. Now, when he's saying Nevuah, Yeshaya lived 100 years before Nebuchadnezzar, but he says, with Nevuah, that there's going to come a point when this nothing of a nation is going to become particularly powerful. So therefore, we have to understand, so again, the Kastim existed for hundreds of thousands of years as a defined group, but as a nation that's strong enough to be able to deploy in three divisions and attack Eev's livestock, we know only in the time of Nebuchadnezzar would they have had that power. Therefore, the Chum say that would be when Eev lived. The Yesh Oimim, then there's yet another opinion. Eev b'mei Yaakov hoya, Eev lives in the time of Yaakov Avinu. The Dina bas Yaakov Nasa, and he married no less than Dina, the daughter of Yaakov. The Ben Yoyada points out, by the way, it's brought in one place that Dina married Shimon. There's an explanation Rashi brings that after the whole thing with Shem, she refused to leave there until Shimon promised that he'd marry her, and Chol ben Akhnanis is her son. So we have to say, Ben Yoyada says, apparently after Shimon passed away, that Eev married her, according to this opinion. And how do we know that? In fact, the Targum on Eev, the Targum on Ksuvim in general, we don't know who wrote them, unlike the Targum on Torah, the official one, which was written by Unkelus, and the one on Nevi'im, which was written by Yonis and Benazil. The Targum on Ksuvim, we don't really know who wrote them or how reliable they are, but anyway, there exists a Targum on Eev, and it actually says, in the Pasuk, where it refers to Eev's wife speaking to him, it names her as Dina bas Yaakov, following this opinion. So Ksuvim, what?
We don't know who
the
author of the
Talmud.
Right.
Who's
the one who put it in there?
Not necessarily. I don't know. Not necessarily. I mean, they found it. They found it in a manuscript and they printed it. I don't know. Anyway. Because in Perek Beis of Eev, so you have like this: Eev first goes through all the troubles with his children and with his animals and his children and everything being taken captive and killed.
What's that topic?
So wait. Let me give a little background over here. The first parak of Eev, the Gemara is going to go through it in more detail later on, but it starts with, you have the whole thing between the Satan and Hashem, that Hashem tells the Satan, fine, you have permission to do whatever you want to Eev's property. So then one thing after another starts happening, the Kastim and the Shva, and so on and so forth, all of his livestock is taken captive, his servants are killed, his children are killed by a hurricane that hit the house, etc., and Eev tears his clothes and everything, but he says, Hashem Nosan, Hashem Lokaf, Yishem, Hashem Mavarach, Hashem's name should be blessed. Then comes the Perek Beis, the Satan comes again before Hashem. Hashem says, so you see, you were saying that Eev is not going to withstand troubles like that, and you see it did. And the Satan says, you know what, but I haven't touched him personally yet. So you'll see, when he's touched it personally, then it'll be different. So Hashem says to the Satan, fine, you have permission to do whatever you want to Eev's body as long as you keep him alive. We'll talk about it later in the Gemara. Then he gets this terrible shchin ra, a bad rashes and boils all over his body in various places. In Sefer Eev, he refers to that he's near death. And now at that point, as his wife says to him, Hashem, you're still holding on to your tmimus. You may as well bless Hashem and die. What's the simple meaning? In other words, she's telling him, you might as well, blessed would be a euphemism. You might as well, yeah. And then, in other words, Hashem will strike you dead and that'll be the end of it. And he tells her, so he answers her with the pasuk over here that the Gemara quotes.
What is this?
Listen, he says to her, "Kedaber achas anavolis to that baby." You're speaking like one of the degenerate women. Navolis, the word novel means somebody degenerate and low class, and like they haven't killed him. I'm a novel believer in another king. It means a wicked way of speaking. Basically,
he says to his wife.
Oh, he says, you're speaking like a person like that. You know, it's beneath your dignity to speak like that. Now, we have that same word used in connection with Dinah, when she was kidnapped and raped by Shem. So the pasuk says that that her brother was very upset that a degrading thing, a nevola, had been done to the Jewish people. So therefore, we see, according to that opinion, that there's a connection.
Yeah.
Now, an interesting question is, in that case, if it's Dinah, how is she telling him that he should curse Hashem? So, in fact, there are Mephoshim who explain that she's not telling him to curse Hashem, but rather the opposite. There are explanations. For example, the Malbim on the Pasuk says that she's saying kind of sarcastically, look what happened. You blessed Hashem after the first things, and now worse happened to you. Now you might as well, then you bless Hashem again, and the next thing you know, you'll be dead. So according to that, she's not telling him to curse Hashem. On the contrary, she's like telling him with bitter sarcasm like that. There's another one in the Mephoshim on Ein Yaakov called Ein Eliyahu that says in a similar vein, she says to him, not in a similar vein, he says actually that she says to him, you know what? Considering how bad you are if you are, and you're near death, yes, make sure from now on to only bless Hashem. You don't want to die as a Russian. But still, he tells her that, you know, that's not an appropriate way to speak either. So now the Gemara points out the whole Tanois Vidalahu to Ivni Sirlava. Now all of these opinions necessarily have to hold, or most of these opinions have to hold that Iyov was in fact a Jew, Lavarmi Yesh Oimrim, with the exception of the Yesh Oimrim, this last opinion, that he lived in the time of Yaakov. Why? And therefore, the point is, when we had Rabbi Yochanan saying that he was a Yid who came up from Golos Babel, then that would be compatible with a number of the other opinions, but not except the... And therefore, it could mean that he was a Yid, and again, his nevuahs were addressed to the Goyim. Why? If you were going to say, according to these various opinions, that he was in the time of the Shoftim, or Ahasuerus, or Malkus Shiva, etc., if he was a Goy, then the fact is, Bosa the Shochid Moshe, after Moshe passed away, did the Shechina ever rest on Goyim to give them Nevuah? No. We learn in a Braisa, Bikish Moshe, Shleitish Shechina, Moshe asked of Hashem, that right after the Chet Egel, that the Shechina should no longer rest on Goyim, the Nitamoy, and Hashem gave him that, Hashem granted him that wish. Moshe asked, I and your people should be distinct, should be distinguished from all the other nations. So that clock is fast. Nevuah should no longer rest on the Goyim. So in other words, if he lived in the time of Yaakov, he could have still been a Navi, even if he was a Goy. If he lived in the time before Yetzias Mitzrayim also, but if he lived after Moshe passed away, it would be impossible. Therefore, if he lived in the time of the Shoftim, or Ahasuerus, or Malkus Shva, etc., then of necessity he would have had to be a Yid. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. What is today? Yudalad Shvat. So La'osid Lavo, it says, Chazal say that the La'osid Lavo, Chazal say that La'osid Lavo, even the non-fruit-bearing trees will start giving fruit, and we'll have Eitz HaSadeh, the trees of the field, will have the greatest perfection. So it'll be like in the time of Adam Rishon, and it'll be like Ishapcha HaShoch LaNahoda, the darkness is transformed, is overturned, transformed into light. In a person's avoida, this is the idea of a odem eitz hasadeh, a person is like a tree of the field. That means the ultimate degree of tshuva to the degree of his hapcha. Zonis nasa lo kazochi is the kind of tshuva where a person's deliberate avoidas become like schosin. And you have even to the degree of tshuva of tzaddikim, as what the Zohar says, that Mashiach will come to bring the tzaddikim to tshuva. So that's represented by this idea of even the non-fruit bearing trees beginning to bear fruit.
Bring tzaddikim to tshuva, you said?
Yeah, that's even the tzaddikim need to do tshuva because they still have a certain, there's still something between them and complete bitul to elikos. Yeah. Continuing on the halachas of so now we start actually in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, we're beginning in the halachas of tzitzis. Person says Krishma without wearing tzitzis, made edus sheker ba'atzma, he's giving false testimony about himself. So we say, in Krishma, you have a mitzvah to wear tzitzis, and he's not wearing it. Obviously, that wouldn't apply to women and girls, but we're talking about boys and men. Since a person has to be careful to do the mitzvah and eager to do the mitzvah as early as possible, therefore, as soon as a person, right after a person has done the tilas yadayim, and his hands are clean, and he's able to make the bracha, then he should wrap himself in tzitzis. So we'll talk about later on the details of that. L'maisa min chabad is to sleep with tzitzis as well, to sleep with night tzitzis. This way you're wearing them all the time, but in the morning you put on a day pair and you make your bracha, not necessarily right away. We have it at the end of morning brachas, but still that you say it as soon as possible.
Shabbat.